CliffCentral.com.
All right, CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday. Good morning. Sia's here, Leanne Moles here, and we are ready to take you through your day. It's going to be a four-day week, which is always nice. Nobody's complaining about that. We got one more four-day week before the end of this month. And yeah, April's definitely starting to feel like April. I mean, you know, it's chilly. It's not the kind of weather that you would just walk around in the T-shirt that you've been in for the last 3 or 4 months. It's definitely changed. And there's that different light. There's like a, everything looks a little bit different in autumn to the way that it looks in the middle of summer. And obviously that's because the sun isn't directly above you in autumn anymore, but it's got like a dappled sort of light. It's not the same. And the sun isn't as hot as it seemed to be just a couple of days ago. So you got to get used to that. Lots of things to get to this morning. I saw with a great deal of sadness that old DMX, one of my favorite rappers, he's dying. There was a story in the news over the weekend about how DMX is in a grave condition in hospital from TMZ. DMX, the guy who did Party Up and what were his other songs? It's All Good. It's All Good. Yeah, that's the guy. He kind of barked at you. He was a great rapper, though. Was. I mean, he's still alive, but he's in a very poor condition at the moment. So I'm very sad to hear that because I like the dude. But you know what? He took a lot of drugs, DMX. Took a lot of drugs, and he was involved in a lot of violence, and I don't think he's the healthiest human being that's ever lived. So it seems to come for you quicker when you're a rapper. It's not easy to be a rapper.
See, so he's one of those people who means different things to different generations.
Yeah.
To you, then you know him as the artist and in his heyday. Yes, I do know that, of course, he's made music. But I know DMX as the guy with close to 10 children.
Yes.
And it should easily be like 6 or 7 baby mamas, so yeah. Which means he was
really
going around.
Even if he was healthy, that stuff will send you to the ICU in a hurry. There's no way you'll live forever if you have 10 children with about 6 baby mamas. That's going to kill you. DMX is actually dying because he wants to. He wants to get
out of, what I know.
He wants to get out all that responsibility.
I know him for the scandal, for the arrests, for getting onto stage late, for getting onto stage drunk. I also saw his child once. This is actually sad. It was one of those moments I don't even think should have been on TV.
Uh-oh.
His child actually wrote into one of those self-help TV shows.
Oh, shit.
And was asking for a better relationship with his father, DMX. Mm. And DMX went on there as well and just could not care. At all, couldn't give a single.
Oh, really?
Damn.
Not
so
interested.
That's what I know as a messy, messy person.
Well, some of those kids have been in, some, not all of the kids have been flown in to say goodbye to him. He's been rushed to hospital. He collapsed at home. He remains in ICU in critical condition. He's been a warrior his entire life, according to some of his kids. They don't mention which ones. The situation represents yet another road he must conquer. They appreciate the overwhelming outpouring of heartfelt love from people like me, not mean people like Sia, who are only talking about the tragedies. You know, Sia. He suffered a drug overdose on Friday night and is currently in hospital. Sources close to the rapper tell TMZ that the OD occurred at his home at around 11 p.m. and it triggered a heart attack. And they're told that he has some brain activity, although sources say that he's in a vegetative state and doctors have cautioned he might not make it. Just because I love my... I shed blood! Oh, my. Lindy, where am I? I want to hear is right here, my...
We're right here. We ain't going anywhere, but...
My favorite line in It's All Good, he goes, this is the greatest line, he goes, and her mouth is like the trash on the Thursday. You know she'd be giving up her ass on the first day. It's great. So good.
So this is according to a website called distractify.com. According to them,
sounds very, DMX sounds very credible.
15 children. Yes.
Distractify.
Yeah. One day I want to be a journalist at distractify.com.
Distractify.com, yes.
How many kids?
15.
Yo.
They say he was originally married to Teresa, and they had 4 children together. And then following that, he's just gone on and on and on and on and on. So he has 11 out of marriage. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at some children's names here. There's a Praise Mary Ella.
That's her name? Praise Mary? You'd think that someone who raps so hard about doing up the ass would know that that is the way to not have children, but clearly he does the other side as well with greater aplomb, you know.
These are 3 separate names.
Yeah,
fit into one.
Okay.
Praise Mary Ella Simmons. That's their surname.
The surname.
There's
Simmons,
Xavier Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Sean Simmons. Okay, that's fine. There's a Tacoma Simmons.
Tacoma, yeah. You know, his name is Earl. So if you heard the name Leanne, Earl Simmons called and left you a voice note, you'd be like, oh, fantastic. Tell him I'll call him right back. It must be the chairman of the board of an electrical company or something. Earl Simmons. Meanwhile, yes. Yo, Leanne, bitch, call me back.
Oh,
very dignified.
Mm-hmm.
What a life.
It's all good. It's all right. All day and all night. Call my bitches because where I go, all my bitches east to the west coast, all my bitches, yo. Chickens is good for plucking, so I'm sticking pictures, fucking give them dick and they be sucking. You know how it goes. It's great. It's really family friendly.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh, that's a lot.
Yeah.
14 siblings. What are you doing with that?
My favorite album from him is Flesh of My Flesh, Blood of My Blood. And it's got a picture of him on the cover, like covered in blood. That's great.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah, no. I was a serious fan, so yeah. I'm not making this up.
I don't wish him ill, really. I think speedy recovery if it's meant to be. But if he were to pass away, I definitely think we're going to see more kids and more women creeping out of the woodwork.
Well, especially if there's any money left in the estate. There was a time where DMX had no money. He had to go and start rapping again or whatever, and he was down and out. But I think those albums are paying off in the long run, you know. And of course, I'm the biggest fan in South Africa, so I've helped sell at least a few albums in this country. Most people,
yes, you've been heavily promoting him for years.
Most people, I have, Leanne. You can stand up for me on this one. So
yes,
most people who know DMX only know Party Up. You know the song. How does it go again? Dun, 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 dun. I can hear it now. Y'all gonna make me lose my mind up in here, here. Y'all gonna make me go all out. That one, right? That's the song. So most people know that one, but I got deep into the catalog of DMX music, and I'm definitely more of a fan of his. I'm way more of a fan of his than I am of Eminem or Snoop Dogg or any of those guys. So
maybe you're in his will.
Jesus, I think it would be good if he left me, like, even if he just left me a signed T-shirt, I'd be happy with it at this point because the guy owes me. I don't think anybody else knows those songs that I
do. All of the hard work.
I've been working hard. See, I used to listen to them so much, I know the goddamn lyrics. I mean, I should get something for that.
Yeah.
Now, you and I have a disagreement, Sia, about something while we're talking about music. We have a major disagreement about a certain show called The Masked Singer. And The Masked Singer...
Oh.
Nick Cannon is the host, right? I think he's still hosting it. Masked Singer, what they do is they bring out a real artist, someone who's actually had success, and they put them in a mask so you don't know who they are. And,
well, it's not a mask. It's a full costume.
Well, it's an outfit, yeah. It's a whole, and it conceals.
They're amazing outfits, really amazing outfits.
You can't see who they are, and then there's like a panel of judges. And how does it work, Sia? Like the judges have to guess who it is?
Yes.
That's that's part of the confusion for me, because I haven't gotten into it and I tried to get into it.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, then I'll tell you, because I've watched like full seasons of it.
Yeah.
But, firstly, it's very American. So it's not something... It's very hard to watch.
You're exasperated.
Because it's quite, a lot of it is like very fake with the judges and everything.
Yeah.
But the actual production and what goes on, it needs to, I mean, this whole thing takes months to film. And it's an elimination, a slow elimination process. But yeah, there's some interesting singers that they uncover. Some of them are very localized Americans, so we may not know them. But they have like YouTube stars and all of that who end up being under these masks.
But
some very big names.
Yeah, I mean, I liked the show that I watched a while ago, and I thought, oh, I must make an effort to watch this again. And I haven't, just because it hasn't come on again, and I don't watch a lot of TV, but I enjoyed the show I watched. It was like two shows back to back, and the one they had T-Pain, and that was quite cool. And then and then after T-Pain, it was Dionne Warwick, who I've always liked. I mean, talk about a very, you know, I really do like a diverse range of stuff from DMX, DMX to Dionne Warwick. And she's great because she was wearing this mouse outfit, and you wouldn't have guessed it was her, but I recognized her voice straight away.
Stupid.
I know it's stupid. They dress them up, and it's kind of embarrassing because, you know, any real artist worth their salt, even if, you know, lockdown has happened and they haven't got anywhere to perform, it's got to be embarrassing to dress up in some, like, leprechaun outfit and go out there with your, you know, your whole head obscured, and then you sing through this ridiculous costume, and people have to guess.
For weeks.
Oh, yeah, for weeks. People have to guess who you are. And listen, I admire anybody who's prepared to do something embarrassing and humiliating to be on TV, because otherwise what would we have to watch? But I didn't find it that – it's not a terrible show. I mean, they still sing songs, and some of them have good voices, and they actually perform nicely. It's not bad.
I've never done MDMA, but I suspect this is what it feels like to have done MDMA when you're watching that show. You would think, what am I processing? What am I seeing right now? It's people in these ridiculous costumes. I don't even know how a Dionne Warwick, I think it was even, was it Gladys Knight or was it Patti LaBelle who was on there? I don't know why they even agreed to be on there, just for their legacy and their perception. You must pay me a shitload to do something this ridiculous.
Oh, I love it so much.
And then it's the set and how people take this seriously. But here's the particular scene that got to me this weekend where I've now washed my hands. I'm not giving this show another chance. I have the clip here. This is after, it's their latest season.
Yeah.
Now, Nick Cannon, I think, had COVID, and so he was off as the host. Niecy Nash was his replacement host for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. And they are revealing who the voice underneath the costume is.
Right.
I'm not going to ruin it just in case you've watched it
let me see if I can guess. All right, go ahead.
Here's, well, it's not the performance itself. It's the reveal of who
all
this
right,
person
let's
is.
All, let's see. Take the reveal. Here we go. This is on...
Who is it?
What's going on?
Who is it?
I'm really confused.
Is there a body inside there?
Ah! There's something in there!
Uh-oh. Oh my gosh! What? What?
Kermit the Frog!
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
No,
wow.
It is Kermit the Frog!
Come on!
The first thing I thought of was
Kermit. I literally said it out loud.
All right. First of all, so there's a lot of like, oh my God, it's Kermit the Frog. Oh, wow. It's like, it's almost like a children's show. I get that. And it irritates you, Sia, because you don't like that kind of thing. Who is that? Is that Asian-looking dude? He's the one from The Hangover, right?
Yes.
Ken Jeong.
Oh, well, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then who's the chick with the blonde hair? It looks like Katy Perry.
She's married to
Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah.
You see, these are real. The judges are D-grade celebrities. I mean, that shows you. Because those two haven't had work since The Hangover 5 and Playboy magazine. So those two, they don't have a whole lot going on. So who's the other judge? Apparently Caitlyn Jenner is in the latest season. And she's awful.
They have guest judges as well.
Yeah.
But the other judge was
Robin Thicke.
Oh. Yes, Robin Thicke.
And Nicole Scherzinger from the Pussycat Dolls.
Okay, so Robin Thicke, who was accused of stealing Marvin Gaye's songs in order to make his own crap songs.
Yes.
And
cheating on his wife, I think.
And cheating on his wife. And yeah, well, at least he gave us that.
Not that it matters.
At least
anyway.
He gave us that music video with that.
Throw that in.
Really hot. Supermodel in it. For that, I forgive him. And then who's the other one you said? Pussycat Dolls.
Nicole Scherzinger.
Right.
Nicole Scherzinger, Pussycat Dolls. Yeah.
Wasn't she married to old Lewis Hamilton for a while?
No, yes. They dated.
Oh, they dated. Yeah. And then,
And
then the Pussycat Dolls, I mean, they haven't put out a song since like the early 2000s, right?
She went solo anyway.
They should make those, judges sing. That will be hilarious. Because I don't know if any of them can.
Hello. Are we missing the fact that there's a freaking man in a puppet in a massive snail costume on primetime television?
That's called
entertainment. And they introduce him as what?
It is
they
called
it. It's
entertainment.
An A-list amphibian.
Yeah. It's entertainment. Seriously. I mean, you know, for example, Duds agrees with you, but then he says, what a load of shit. Holy ass fart on my face and call me stinky. Okay, well, you know, calm it down, Dads. Bihlang says the judges on the show are the worst. You can see they know who those people are, but then they go pretending like they have no idea. That Dr. Ken or whatever his name is annoying as F. Yeah.
Look, I will
even the audience
them
is annoying.
All right, but see, you said to me the other day when I brought up that Ellen DeGeneres has this game show, which is really childish and pathetic. And, you know, that Americans like that kind of slapstick, dumb humor. So how can you like the Ellen game show, but you don't like this one?
I don't know. I just think you're losing brain cells watching this. I really, really, really think this is super silly. I will praise them on a great production. Look, it's done by people who have a shitload of money who throw it at them. Wendy Williams was on a season, I think a season back or something, and she explained it on her talk show just how much goes into it. So even the crew genuinely doesn't know who these people are, because that would ruin the whole thing. Yeah, even when these artists go in backstage, they're in separate, it's not even rooms, like as in change rooms, they're in separate tents on a lot with their own security to hide their identity.
Yeah.
Wendy Williams, who does a 5-day-a-week talk show, or they film on 4 days, would leave New York on a Thursday night, and she'd be flown on a private jet to LA where this is shot. The people on her talk show didn't even know that she was missing over weekends to film this. So yeah, it's really done well, but I can't stand it. But I think I'm in the minority, because the show now has a spin-off. I think I forget the name, but the premise of this new spin-off is Can I Sing? So people walk onto a stage. There's a panel of judges who, based on how these people look, vote on whether they're great singers or not. And then the big plot of the show is these people sing, and then it's, are they talented or not?
You know, that's the way you've just described it. It reminds me of something that it sounds really familiar. It sounds like something I've done once in my life before. I can't imagine what that is.
Yeah.
Unreal. Do you guys know what?
I'll stick to the Kardashians. Thank you.
Do you guys do you know what Zoom Escaper is? Zoom Escaper. You ever heard of that?
No.
What is that?
Zoom Escaper is a is a program, an app that adds fake effects to your audio stream, making your presence on a video call unbearable to others, giving you an excuse to leave the call. So while you're
in what way?
Listen to this. So it includes a bad connection sound that makes it sound like you're breaking up, an upset baby, or a man weeping. And then what will happen is if you really need to get out of the Zoom call, like let's say you need to go to the loo or you're just really bored or you've got another appointment, then you play the sound on this app and then it makes it sound like you're breaking up. And then people go, oh, well, okay, we'll be losing Leanne. Leanne, I think we'll send you the video after this.
Yeah.
And you can catch up after because we can't concentrate with that baby crying in the background. Now imagine how funny it is as someone who doesn't have a baby suddenly has like a baby crying in the background. How odd that would be.
Yeah, I mean, if it came from one of our houses, we'd be very confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of explaining to do there.
But you can get this thing. It's called Zoom Escaper. And I just think it's so clever that there are people who are working on ways to, to subvert the use of these video conferencing apps. I think it's really clever.
People are so dodgy.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's creative. I don't think it's dodgy. I think it's genius. How often have you been on a meeting and you just couldn't wait to get out of it? It's happened to me often. In the last year, are you kidding? All the time.
Yeah, but work is work. Just do your work. Now you're going to fake having your connection dip and then what? Next thing it's going to look like your background is on fire, so you're going to put out a fire.
Not all of us have the ability to concentrate that like you do. I've always had ADHD ever since I was, able to comprehend the things around me. And for me to have an excuse is just fantastic. I can't wait to get off. If I'm on one of those video conferencing apps, if I'm doing a meeting and it goes on for longer than 20 minutes, anything distracts me. Birds flying around outside will distract me. The pen on my desk will distract me. Everything. It's crazy. You can't keep me busy for longer than 20 minutes. I start becoming a problem.
I've had to have quite a few neighbor meetings, community type meetings on Zoom.
Yeah.
And the amount of people who've actually never used it before, or they're using it on their phone and walking around with it, or they haven't muted themselves, so you hear all the background noise, all the kids screaming or while they're cooking.
Mm-hmm.
They talk over each other, and it's just so annoying. Before we have a meeting, I'm that person who sends a message saying, please mute your mics if you're not speaking.
Yeah, you sound so painful. You've taken over as the chairman of the board. A friend of mine told me over the weekend that he has become the chairman of his, what would you call it? It's a
community forum.
No, like a complex. It's a complex of mm-hmm. apartments. Oh,
body corporate.
Body corporate. That's it. He's the chairman of that. And I said to him, why would you do that? And he's like, well, first of all, I want to look after my property. I bought this place in the complex, and the last group who were running this body corporate, they didn't do a good job. So I said to him, yeah, that's fine. Surely you don't need to run it yourself. He's like, no. The other reason is that these meetings used to take too long. Now, with him as the chairman, he says they finished in 40 minutes. They used to go up to 4 hours.
So, oh, no.
So he's just decided for efficiency that he'd rather run it. And now, there's some woman in unit number 13 or whatever. I would like to say something as an owner. And he goes, no. We asked you for your submissions a month ago. We said, if you want to be included in the agenda, you need to send us your submission now. You didn't. So I'm terribly sorry, Mrs. Whatever you are, number 13. I'm cutting you off the call. So he runs things like it runs like a well-oiled machine under him. And that's great. If you have a moderator who can control everything and keep it tight and really efficient, I think that's fantastic. But I would never have picked, him for being like a chairman of the board.
My brother did a similar thing. He bought inside of a complex and he became part of the body corporates, and then he became like the chairperson or whatever. And he didn't like the fact that the complex hadn't been painted in years. It was also a color he didn't like. He didn't like the fact that there wasn't good signage.
Yeah.
That the actual name of the complex was like in this old font. So he changed everything.
That's
he brought in landscapers. He did, planted plants, had the whole complex painted in the color he liked, and then he left.
But doesn't this show you, I mean, this is a great example of, you know, if you get the right person in the right job, everything gets better. And it shows you how many useless people there are in the world who just can't get anything done, and they just take up space. And you don't need to consult with everybody. I mean, most people have nothing valuable to add. They just want to be heard. It's all about them. Pay attention to me. But they don't really, they can't do anything. Like your brother, obviously, you know, got all these things done like this. I think that's so great. Yeah. And most people be like, oh, you know, they, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? Why don't you do it? The reason you're sitting here saying, why don't we, is because you actually can't do shit on your own. It's ridiculous.
Anyway. I don't know why I'm just thinking about those 4-hour long meetings. And the only thing I'm considering is the fact that that is the perfect time for the killer to strike.
Yeah. So, yeah, you
if
don't.
If the killer knows you guys are all in one unit.
No,
for that meeting every month, you know,
no,
or the robber can come in.
You guys should know.
Yeah, or the killer can hide in your cupboard while you're out.
You should know if there's a killer in the complex. You're not paying attention otherwise.
You never know.
So I want to tell you about something. You know, we're all talking about what we're going through in, you know, the year of COVID and all that stuff, and it's now been just over a year. But what is it like to be on the ground and working to reduce the impact of COVID-19, especially in places where there isn't a lot of assistance? Now, there's someone called Molly Bernstein and another person called Sita Cacioppe, and they know this very well. They're from something called ISRAID, which is an international non-governmental humanitarian aid organization. They're based in Israel. And one of their massive tasks is a vaccine program in our neighbor country, Eswatini, right? We're going to find out from them. We've got Molly and we've got Sita here. Hey, Molly. Hey, Sita. How are you guys?
Good morning. Hi, fine. Thank you.
Great. Great. Good to see you both. Sita, I hope I got your surname right. Cacioppe, right?
It is. I'm actually from Australia, so I kind of pronounce it with the Australian accent, but it's very close.
How do you do it in an Australian accent? Go on.
Cacioppe
is fine. Cacioppe is good. So, Molly, thanks very much for joining us, guys. First of all, tell us about ISRAID. It's ISRA and then AID. You guys are obviously one of these great organizations that does all this incredible work, and nobody ever hears about you until they're involved. And the whole of Eswatini basically owe you guys some thanks for starting their vaccine program. It probably wouldn't have any vaccinations in Swaziland, Eswatini, if it wasn't for you guys. How did this all begin, Molly?
So the Ministry of Health in Eswatini approached us in collaboration with the Kirsch Foundation and invited us to come take a look and see how we can support with their vaccine rollout. They are receiving vaccines through other sources, but basically the rollout, as we all have experienced in our various countries, is very complex. And we have a lot of experience in this aspect from you know, the successful story here in Israel. So we are invited to come work with the Ministry of Health and help provide any support that we can, any input that we can, to help make sure that it's really successful and gets to all the right spots.
I think this is so great because we know that during COVID-19, the disease claimed the lives of several of their leaders, including the Prime Minister, actually, Ambrose Dlamini, who was unfortunately, he succumbed to COVID-19 too. Got the highest COVID-19 death rates in Africa, highest HIV prevalence in the world. So this country needs all the help it can get, and the fact that you guys are involved is just terrific. Now, I don't think a lot of people know about this, and that's not why you do it, obviously. But when it comes to trying to roll out a massive program like this, Sita, what does that involve? I mean, what kind of logistics are at play here?
It's huge. I mean, it's massive. We're looking at different types of vaccines coming in that require different types of cold chain maintenance. And especially with the deep freeze ones, we're looking at cryopreserve, and we're looking at getting them out to communities in time so that they're not wasted. On top of that, we don't know which vaccines are coming in at which time. And so we also need to prepare the teams, train the teams if possible, and to support them, particularly with the cold chain. The logistics around that is enormous. And we also need to consider the fact that, you know, there's a limited number of vaccines coming, and so we don't want to waste any. So it's that fine balance between making sure, you know, people are coming for the vaccines, they're aware of the vaccines, and where they're going to be on the day, as well as not and then getting them, but not wasting any doses at the same time. So there's a very fine balance between both of those aspects.
How is that rollout going at the moment? It's a lot of people that you have to reach in sometimes very far-flung corners of the country. And, you know, Swatini does not have a great road system in certain parts of the country. It's very hard to get to these villages and so on. How's the rollout actually looking at the moment?
So at the moment they are vaccinating. They're calling it phase one. Phase one is going really well. They're about to complete the vaccinations of their frontline workers, as well as moving into their over 60s with comorbidities. So it is happening, and they're doing a fantastic job of it. Our plan is to get there as quickly as we can, and to support the next phase of that rollout. And we're identify key areas where we can sort of specialize and bring in our specialties to support that, which, you know, includes data collection. Again, like I said, the cold chain side of things, mm-hmm. As well as really closely monitoring the micro planning of it.
And Molly,
I think one thing to add and remember there is also that exactly what you just explained in terms of the country's history with HIV and the past experience it has in dealing with crisis is actually a huge asset in this situation, because the local system already has a lot of capacity to reach out to these very rural situations and make sure people get tested for HIV and get on antiviral treatments. And that's a lot of the way that that you know we approach this work and that we really see Eswatini is that actually there's a lot of potential to be really successful because they've already overcome so much, so many challenges. And that means that we can really sort of look at those past successes and you know, in the same breath as that they have the highest HIV prevalence in the world, they've also been incredibly successful in terms of both stymieing the spread of it, but also in terms of ensuring that over 90% of people are on treatments and are regularly seeking therapies. And that really, there's a lot that can be actually leveraged and sort of used towards this goal as well. When we look at that wider picture of everything that's happening in this public health situation.
It's like you've got the pipeline already. There we go. It's like you've got the pipeline already organized. It's really incredible. So let's just talk for a second about ISRAID, and you guys also focus on the mental health and the resilience of the country's frontline workers, which is, I suppose, a very important part of this too, because some of those people may be exhausted. They may have been working nonstop to try and do whatever they could to deliver vaccines and care to people who are already suffering. So obviously, ISRAID is very involved in basically saving Eswatini from this disease, because otherwise they would have had very little to help them combat it. But you're not only involved there, you're involved in 16 countries just with respect to the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah, so we've been responding all over the world over the last year. We try to be wherever we can and provide any support that we can. So we're across the region in Africa, we're in South Sudan, we're in Uganda, we're in Uganda, in Kenya, we're in Mozambique. And in all of these locations and in all of our other missions around the world, it's about sort of figuring out, again, which systems can be leveraged, right? What already exists and how can that be a boost in responding? And then also sort of adding these plugins that provide additional support. So, for example, in Mozambique, a huge successful program that we've been doing over the last year is exactly in this mental health and psychosocial support sector, is getting on radio shows, is leveraging the media and the way that the infrastructure that already exists in terms of how people communicate with one another to provide mental health and stress relief messaging and activities that can be done wow. at home with children to make sure that, you know, that that's also being addressed. And that's sort of the approach that we're you know, trying to replicate and adapt in all of our different contexts, to really see what the gaps are, see what can be leveraged and run with it.
And Sita, I believe you're actually a nurse originally.
I am.
That's what you studied nursing, and that's what you did for a while. So you've spent a lot of time in the medical world, and obviously your main emphasis now and your main work is involved in, you know, the healthcare sector. So this must be quite rewarding yep. work for you. How big is ISRAID, Molly? Can you give us some idea of kind of where you guys come from, what the reason is that ISRAID might be involved in places as bizarre as South Sudan, Mozambique? You know, these are not, you wouldn't think of this. And, you know, Israel gets a really hard rap from a lot of places all over the world. And there are lots of people who are not particularly kind towards Israel for various reasons. They don't like their internal policies or their foreign policies or whatever. But here's Israel doing more than any of those countries that governments like South Africa say nice things about. Where does it come from? What started ISRAID and what, it's since 2001 or something?
Yeah, so we've been around since 2001. We have missions all over the world. We have some 400 staff all over the globe, and most of our teams in every given location are made up of locals who've been working with us as, you know, in some kind of role, whether it's as a trained professional or as a community worker who does, you know, sort of outreach pieces. Mm. And since 2001, we've been using these, you know, these different models, many of which are sort of rooted in a very Israeli approach to how we see the world, right? Israel, we have a water problem. We don't have enough water in the country, and we've had, because of that, we have amazing water technologies to manage and increase sort of water access. So those are things that we can bring to other people. In that same respect, we're a country with a lot of trauma, with a lot of sort of difficult experiences all across, you know, the whole swath of the population faces different challenges depending on their experience. And because of that, we have a lot of, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder treatments. A lot of the cutting edge of that work is happening in Israel. So again, great. Like, that's something we can share. That's something we can bring to other locations.
That's
and that's sort of what we do in all these places.
No, I think it's really, it's incredible.
Sorry, yeah. I was just going to say as well, just to add the global health and public health side of that into it as well. I mean, COVID's changed the face of public health. It really has. And I think over the last 12, 18 months, we've seen that more and more. And it's trying to pivot our activities in the health sector to make sure that people still have access to healthcare where they can. And even if that's remotely, we need to do what we can for them to access it.
Yeah, I think that's really important. But I think the whole idea of ISRAID coming to help out in places like Eswatini, right next door to us, is just incredible. I believe, Molly, that you've spent quite a lot of time all over the world. You actually speak what, Persian and Arabic as well. So you're by no means just some localized Israeli. You've seen a lot of the world. Have you been to Eswatini? Do you know much about the country firsthand, or are you dealing with people there every day who tell you about things?
Yeah, so we just got back. We came back for the Passover holiday, and we had an election in Israel, so we wanted to get back to vote and to be with our families for the first holiday out of lockdown. So
wow.
That was very exciting, and now we're heading back. So that's sort of the plan. We just popped back to Israel
sure.
for that quick return, and we'll be back on the ground very, very soon.
And Israel is such a success story when it comes to COVID. I mean, things are pretty much back to normal there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not far off. And I think that is one thing that we've got, is just how fast, how quickly and how accurately the vaccine rollout was. And so we're trying to leverage as much as we can on that experience. We're bringing in specialists that have worked within the vaccine campaign here to Eswatini to support the Ministry of Health, support other actors, international and local, working on the ground, and to bring all of that experience to them if we can.
Well, keep doing
it. We feel super, super lucky and to have been where we were during this crisis, and to be really among the first communities to be vaccinated and back to normal life. And we really just, we want everyone to have that opportunity. We want everyone to get that, you know, to get sort of the rush of relief that comes with the first and the second jab, if the second one happens for you, depending on which type of vaccine you get. And, you know, just a couple of weeks ago when we were standing with the Minister of Health herself in Eswatini after she got her first jab, you know, that's exactly what we were talking about. Is wow. She called it an injection of hope, right, which was quite poetic. But it's really an emotional moment, and we want everyone to get that emotional moment. We want everyone to have access to vaccines and access to information, access to public health. And that's what this is all about.
Well, I'm going to say it again. Keep doing the really great work that you're doing. And thank God that there are organizations like yours that are going around the world and helping out in places where we really need all the help we can get. I almost wish Israel was in charge of distributing vaccines in South Africa. We might all be vaccinated by now. It sounds like you're the most efficient people to get. So keep doing it. Thank you so much, Molly. Thank you so much, Sita. Good to see you both.
Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
And you, very, very good. There's Molly Bernstein and Sita Cassiope, she says. She's the head of health and medical sector at Israel, and Molly's the development and communications manager. And here we are in the southern tip of Africa. And, you know, next time someone says, oh, Israel, X, Y, and Z, and you know I'm a massive supporter of Israel, so I don't have to disguise that. But next time somebody says something about Israel and they say, oh, South Africa and Israel, and they, you know, they give you some long, drawn out, extremely complex reason for why they hate Israel, just remind them that it's thanks to Israel that the people of Eswatini will be vaccinated at some point. They may even be vaccinated before all of us get ours. So just be careful.
Mm-hmm. That injection of hope sounds mighty, mighty good right about now.
Well, you know, the funny thing was, like, over the weekend, I was in Umhlanga and I was walking around. I had a mask. I didn't put it on for much of the time because I was far enough away from people. And I had conversations with people about what the right etiquette is, because some people, you know, they look at you funny when you don't wear it. Some people look at you funny when you do. So I kind of carry it around because I think it's all a big show when we go into restaurants and things, and you take them off when you sit down anyway. So I just hold mine up to my face when I walk through the door of the restaurant. Then when I sit down, I just put it in my pocket. But more or less, I would say 80 to 90% of people just have stopped giving a shit about it anyway in that part of the world. I don't know that that's true everywhere. And I did pop into a shop on my way back home yesterday just to get some basic stuff from the, it's like a garage shop. And I walked in and I didn't have my mask, and, you know, they didn't make a fuss and I didn't make a fuss and I didn't go near anybody. So if there was someone around and they were nervous, I wouldn't have like breathed on them or coughed near them or any of that stuff. But I think that most people have just sort of moved on by now, and they really don't care as much anymore. And there are still obviously people who are very, very worried. And then there are those people who don't give a shit at all. And I think somewhere in between is where we should be.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, I'm
seeing,
ready for,
even though
I'm ready.
One at a time. Sorry.
There's a delay on my side.
Children, put your hands up, and then the teacher will let you talk when you put your hands up. Do not speak unless you've got your hand up. So, Leanne, you go first.
Yes. Go ahead.
It's weird that as time has moved on, we should be so used to wearing a mask, yet I'm finding more and more people are forgetting. Including myself. Mm. I'll get to the door of the garage or whatever, and I have to run back to my car because I've forgotten. I think it's because we've dealt with it so well mentally by now that we don't feel like there's this ongoing pandemic around us, and that fear factor has gone.
Yeah, well, that's probably a good thing. Sia, what did you want to say?
But there are all of these gray areas as well, though. You know, while I'm in Durban, I'm thinking of going to the promenade and cycling there. But it's, you know, you're outside and you're cycling, so moving at a quick pace one would think you don't need to have your mask on. And also you just want to be able to breathe properly with doing an activity like that. But then should you need to have your mask on? But then I saw quite a ridiculous sight over the weekend of a man with one of those massive, massive beards. So he didn't even have his mask on properly. And I thought you were actually better off going around without your mask on at all. Because when you think about it, your mask hooks onto your chin. And with that massive beard, he can't do that. So he had this sliver of fabric that was just almost like being held on by his lip and a bit of his nose. And that was it. So... you do think, like, what are we still doing this for? And I get it, though. But, yeah, the more I see other people in different countries get this vaccine, I now think I am not that important.
Well, I don't know if you...
Big Brother in the sky looking at me going, we are actually going to use Seer to plant a chip in, please. So,
I do like the fact that in the UK there were protests over the last couple of days against a vaccine passport because they said, no, that wasn't what you promised us at the beginning. And they basically told Boris's government to get screwed because... they were saying, oh, no, you're going to need this vaccine passport to travel. And they said, hold on. You said we must get the vaccine in order to, you know, make sure that we immunized the country and people wouldn't have to worry about catching this so we could stop wearing masks and we could travel again. Don't now bring this this vaccine passport bullshit into our world. So they stood up to the government, and I think that they've managed to persuade them. I mean, it's like Angela Merkel had to very quickly roll back her plans for a lockdown after the German people took to the streets and said to her, oh, no, this is not what we signed up for. So it does seem to me that people in the world are starting to make their voices heard. Their leaders are not just pushing them around. And even in this country, I don't think it would be possible for Cyril to put us back under a full lockdown because most people wouldn't listen. A lot of people didn't listen the first time.
Clearly, it's important to them to protest something like a vaccine passport. But to me, we've done it before. So why is it a big deal now? You've gone to certain countries and then you need to do that yellow fever test. And then you have to bring this with. So doesn't seem like that much of a deal to me.
Katu Kat says people are pretty relaxed about masks in the Northern Cape as well. It almost feels normal here. We only wear masks to go to the shops. Me too. But Kat, I mean, there's only like 10 people in the Northern Cape, so I don't know why you guys, you don't have to worry. Apparently, listen to this, ShopRite threatened Erica with arrest and threw her out and banned her for life for not wearing a fabric mask. They didn't even look at my doctor's letter. I had a plastic mask on. Yeah, well,
geez, that's a bit harsh.
Erica, in that case, don't shop at ShopRite again. They must learn that if they treat their customers like that, and you had a doctor's letter and you had every reason to be able to do what you were doing, they shouldn't be allowed to treat you like that. Don't support them anymore. So that's the way to sort this out. Don't give them any of your money. And Ruth responding saying, Erica, that's hectic, but people need to be educated in this country. It's a huge problem. Well, yes, but... really, if the shop treats you like a criminal, treats you like a bad person for not wearing this mask, which we know is, you know, it may help a little bit or it may not help at all. The jury's still out on that. But the fact that they are applying government's rules and becoming the enforcers themselves. And by the way, the same goes the other way around. If you go to a shop and people aren't wearing a mask and it makes you uncomfortable, don't go to that shop again. You know, you don't have to go to the place that you either feel uncomfortable because people aren't wearing a mask or if they treat you badly because you're not wearing a mask, you just go to another place. You'll find a place that will allow you to do that. So, Oryx,
we're so far away from any of this being sorted or any of this being somewhat normal because again, this weekend I was, out and, at Sandton City doing some shopping. You think Sandton is a, you know, people are there and they understand what it means to be around people. But there was a gentleman there who clearly was doing this for as a massive performative gesture, but he had his mask on over his forehead and he got, I walked past him as he was having an interaction with two ladies who clearly were confronting him about it. And I just heard him scream and say, actually, you can't arrest me. I'm not doing anything wrong. The regulation says your mask needs to be on your face. It is on my face. And I thought, I actually don't want to be around this. I swear it was probably a social media moment. Someone filmed that just for the benefits of a response.
I don't feel like, you know what, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not going to do things that are going to get me arrested. I don't like the masks. I don't support the idea of masks. I think that they're dumb. But if I'm walking around in public with other people, then it's not my house. I have to follow certain rules. And I'm not going to go to the lengths of getting arrested just because I don't want to wear a mask. I'll just get on with it. I'm not I'm not interested in having a fight with someone. At the same time, if I'm walking around without my mask on, don't come up to me out of the blue as someone who's not involved in my immediate space and tell me that I have to X, Y, and Z, because it's got nothing to do with you. RX Head says, I've just come from Windhoek in Namibia. Nobody wears a mask there. That's interesting. Erica, just to explain why she wasn't wearing a mask, she says she has a disability. She suffers from trigeminal neuralgia, which is known as the suicide disease. I can't tolerate anything against the skin on my face. I'm going to say I have that, Erica. Can't I get a doctor's note that I can say?
You need to remember that very long phrase.
I don't care. I'll remember it. Trigeminal neuralgia.
I think it's trigeminal.
I don't know. If someone who's a doctor can tell us how to pronounce that, that would be helpful. I don't know, but I like
a chronic pain condition affecting the trigeminal nerve in the face, and this nerve carries sensation from the face to the brain. It's most common in women aged over 50.
Oh, Erica, are you aged over 50?
Yeah, like, we'll tolerate your disease, but we won't tolerate you if you're over 50.
Danlin says, out of the blue, he says, hey, have you heard about the new alien evidence that just came up? No, but I'm fascinated by this stuff. I've been bombarded. This one friend of mine, I think I told you about him last year already. He's one of the smartest people I know, and he is so into this alien stuff, you have no idea. Like, he's deep into it, right? And he sends me these articles about, you know, newly declassified files from the Pentagon, and it's really cool. So I'm watching it from a distance. I'm not about to jump in with the alien people and say, oh, there's flying saucers running around. But I do think that there's stuff going on that we're not entirely aware of. And there's probably stuff that governments have been hiding from us. And there's probably stuff that humans wouldn't be able to deal with, even if we all found out at the same time. So I'm watching it from a distance. I'm not jumping in with both feet yet, but I'll let you know how that goes. So you pronounce it trigeminal.
Trigeminal.
Ah, whatever. Apparently. I mean, that's what I just heard from the doctor anyway. All right.
It's sometimes described as the most excruciating pain known to humanity.
I'm sorry for those people who really have it, but I'm going to be pretending I have it from now on. Just so I don't have to wear the mask.
This intense stabbing electric shock-like
pain. No, I can feel it
pain.
Now. You see, I can't. I just can't wear a mask. I'm going to get a doctor's note right now. I know some doctors who write me a note about this. Lenise says, I walk into our local grocery store in Belgium, forgot to put my mask on. No one said anything. Halfway through the shop, I realized and quickly put it on, but no one said anything. I walked right past the security. Yes. Yes. Good. Lenise, good. We'll get to the point eventually where people stop giving a shit. Because also, I do think that the fear of all of this is dissipating slowly but surely. I got a couple of messages on DMX here, and you know what a fan I am, and I have to refer to the fact that I'm not the only one. Elson, who is also a fan, says DMX is such a legend. He also started every album with a prayer. Yeah, that's him. That's the guy. DMX, the rapper who's dying in hospital at the moment.
It started off with a prayer, and then he would talk about all his hoes across the country
from east
to west.
That's right. That's the balance, the beauty of DMX. So you get the best of both worlds. Are we reading Leanne, her voice marriage proposal from last week? Yeah, that's interesting. Isn't it great that Gareth got rid of his anger issues, especially when things didn't work before the COVID situation hit? I love you guys. Well, thanks for that. I don't know that I've gotten rid of all the anger issues. But I will try. So, Leanne, there was someone who sent us an email the other day to say that they'd fallen in love with your voice, and he's just plucking up the courage to propose to you just on the basis of your voice. He says you don't even have to have sex, you don't even have to live in the same house, but he does want to hear your voice every day.
Oh.
They are from Zimbabwe. I don't know if that will...
Yes.
Are you in for long distance right now?
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
Well, aren't we all doing long distance anyway, even if the person lives in your suburb?
Right. So it wouldn't be that difficult.
Yeah, it can work. It can work.
All right. And I mean, listen, Leanne, you're still on the shelf, right? You're still there. You're still on the market, so to speak.
On the shelf.
No, she's on the shelf. She's there. She's available for purchase in terms, and not for actual purchase, for those Arab gentlemen who might.
Not like Lebola.
Yeah.
Or Lebola.
Yeah. So, if you know, there might be someone from Saudi Arabia who's like, oh, I want to buy her. I will buy her. Here's 15 camels. No, I'm not talking like that. I'm saying that, you know, if the right guy came along, you might consider marriage a second time.
Whew, that's heavy. But yes, oh. I can't say no or never again, or it'll never happen.
I mean, let's just imagine
life changes.
Let's imagine a 95-year-old man with 400 million rand in the bank. I mean, that would be worth considering.
My gosh. That would
be a good option.
Absolutely.
if he said to you on his ventilator,
I just want to motorboat you every day just for half an hour, and then you can have half my money.
What would you
say?
Yeah,
that's a done deal.
It's a good deal, right?
Come on.
Done deal.
And that's even some sort of giving back or community service. You can get some sort of a tax break for doing that.
Absolutely. Eric is back again with her, what is it, neuralgia thing. She says, what horrified me is that ShopRite didn't care. They were more concerned about...
Trigeminal.
Yes, that's the one. They were more concerned about adhering to the regulations and not the human. They banned me. I think that's horrible. I really do. I think that's absolutely horrible. Not a good story for them. So you've got to be careful. It's like the, you know, when we went into that very hard lockdown last year and... like the homeowners association here, or the estate manager, or whatever his name was. He was like, no, we've got to enforce this rule strictly. So I was like, oh, you're working for the government now, are you? Because that's the way I see it. It's like, what you're really doing is you're saying, okay, I work for Becky Taylor. I'm going to make sure we enforce the dumb rules that he puts in place. Like about wearing, you know, not wearing open shoes or not buying Woolworths warm chicken. You know, remember those dumb rules, and everybody took them seriously?
Oh, how far we've come.
I know. But don't think for a second that we've got better people in charge now, because we've got the same people in charge. Don't forget. They're still there. They've just realized that they made stupid decisions then and affected their credibility. But don't think they won't make dumb decisions again. All right, everybody, we're out of time. It's 8 o'clock already. This morning's gone so quickly. Sure. And we've only got 3 days left of this week. So make sure you get all your work done in 3 days. All right. We will see you tomorrow.
And thoughts and prayers to Earl DMX Simmons.
Yeah. What a guy. I hope he makes it through. And
it's Friday, a public holiday again.
No, but yesterday wasn't. Yesterday was Monday, Leanne.
So that means 4 days.
Yes. So, but we've got three left after today.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Let's not get into maths at this hour of the day, please.
I agree. The last thing you need is for all of us to start doing maths at 8 o'clock in the morning. All right, everybody.
No.
Have a happy day. We will see you tomorrow.
CliffCentral.com